Welcome, everyone, to episode 367 of the NBA podcast. After 12 months, the 2019-2020 season is finally over. The Los Angeles Lakers are your 2020 NBA champions. So we will go into today's episode diagnosing what we got wrong, because we were both pretty bearish on the Lakers. We will then go into what's next for the Lakers and Heat, and then preview the upcoming offseason. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is my co-host who is not feeling 100%, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
Well, I am more clocked than the Milwaukee Bucks' defense, Brian. That's where I am. I am feeling very, very poorly. But you know what? There's just no way in hell that I can say no thanks to coming on this podcast, because you know the championship's just been crowned. And coincidentally, I was supposed to be on live TV, you know, for TV2 during the final game, during the pregame show, and I was pretty hyped about it. And of course, on the day of it, I woke up and felt horrible because my timing is just fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. But I want to go straight into this because you're absolutely right. You and I were not high on the Lakers, but I do think the reason for that being it was actually quite correct. Like we did not question whether or not LeBron James and Anthony Davis could step up. We knew that they could. We questioned the supporting cast. We questioned whether Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo, Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, Markieff Morris could step up and do so reliably over the course of a full series. And, you know, when we look back at the series against Miami, I just want to point out we weren't entirely wrong in terms of their shooting percentages, at least. Like, Pope, Rondo, Kuzma, Green, and Morris all hit under 40% from the field. So in that vein, we weren't inaccurate. What we just did was we kind of forgot that LeBron James was still this good.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think for me it came down to two things. One was I got hung up on the question of who is their third best player. And I think the same thing happened with me in the Dallas Mavericks this year. It was like, I have no doubt about Luka Doncic and Kristaps. I have no doubt about LeBron and Anthony Davis. For the Mavericks, of course, Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, had a career best season, so that kind of rendered that question moot anyway. But for the Lakers, you know, I still, they're the NBA champions, I still cannot answer who is their third best player. And I think, you know, they almost rendered that irrelevant. Like, rather than needing, we're going to definitely get 15 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists from Kyle Kuzma every night, it was like, okay, well, one night it could be KCP, one night it could be Rondo, one night it could be Danny Green, one night it could be Dwight Howard, and you didn't know where that production was coming from, but it right. did come from somewhere every night.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting way, right? Because as long as you just have one or two guys who step up every given night, it doesn't matter if someone else just has an off night because you can survive it. Mm-hmm. I think for us the question was, you know, what if all of these guys just struggle consistently throughout playoff series? And to their credit, they didn't. You have, you know, in game six, Rajon Rondo came alive, for example. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, KCP, I know his shooting percentages weren't great in that series, but at the same time, it felt like he hit a number of big shots. Like, maybe it's just right. he, you know, first, second, third quarter, he was missing like crazy. But then the fourth quarter, I mean, he hit some either like lead widening shots, or he just seemed to stymie Heat rallies consistently throughout that series, especially in those last few games. So, I mean, if I had to answer the question, it would probably be KCP throughout the finals was their third best player. But as you said, Rondo had a big night. I mean, Danny Green, credit to him after, you know, missing the shot that could have clinched it in game five and getting death threats, which, come on, Lakers fans. I mean, that's just, don't do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, he came back and had a nice game six as well. Dwight Howard wasn't really used in this series, but, he, you know, in the matchup against Denver in particular, he was really useful. So,
right.
I mean, I think one of the things that made the Lakers so good this year was, of course, LeBron and AD, but they were also pretty malleable in terms of, okay, we can play big. We, you know, we have Dwight and JaVale who we can throw at the five. So in a matchup like Denver, where we're going against Jokic, we can play up to their size. But against Miami, they downsized. I mean, game six, AD moved to center. Caruso came into the starting lineup. They matched fire with fire, and they won that battle resoundingly. I mean, they opened a 30-point lead in the second quarter. Like, you know, for as good as game five was, game six sucked. It was just a Lakers coronation from basically the first quarter on. So I think it's it's a testament to, you know, we've been hammering this point all playoffs is versatility, versatility, versatility. Like, if you are stuck playing one style and the team has a counter for that style, you are in trouble. If you are, you know, if you're able to shift from, all right, we are a big team and we're going to hammer teams with size and rebounding and defense, which is the Lakers' mantra all year. But also we can, you know, we can downsize if we need to, and we could still play winning basketball doing that. You know, I think that's the mark of a champion, as we've seen here.
Right. And you also have to wonder, moving forward, whether teams are going to be looking at the rebounding factor. Because, you know, in today's league, we have seen rebounding be deprioritized. You know, it's almost like, oh, it doesn't matter as long as we have flexible defenses, yada, yada, yada. Well, if there's a team out there that just decides, you know what, we're actually going to be a factor on the glass. We understand where the league is trending, but you know what, we acquire additional possessions by rebounding the ball. That is what a rebound effectively does. It gains us a possession. And the Lakers were like, sure, if you don't want those boards, we'll take them. Bradley. That's fine. I mean, LeBron averaged 12 rebounds in this finals, and Anthony Davis 11. Rajon Rondo was over 5. You know, it's... They averaged 45 rebounds per game. Miami was at 37.5. And I think ultimately we are going to see some teams in the league kind of wake up a little bit and go, maybe rebounding isn't a bad thing. Maybe we actually should put an emphasis on rebounding. That might be a good idea.
Yeah, it's like the reprioritization of obviously teams want to rebound, but like, yes, teams have shifted away from prioritizing that, whereas the Lakers, I mean, that was one of their big focuses. And Jimmy Butler, throughout the finals, kept saying, like, we need to rebound better. That is the key to this series. We have to at least draw even with them on rebounds. And, you know, in games 3 and 5, I think it was probably closer than game 6 was just... I mean, game 6 was... The Lakers' defense was just locked in from the jump.
Right.
And, you know, the Heat... couldn't do anything against them. And that, you know, I think that identity, every team like wants to pride itself on being defense oriented and, you know, defense wins championships, all that. So it, you know, you look ahead to like a Minnesota team that is very clearly deprioritizing that. I don't know what that says about their championship upside, but I think the other thing for me with the Lakers was not that we underestimated LeBron James, because we had him number 2 in our MVP race. Like, he was very clearly year 17. He's still one of the best players in the league, which just doesn't make sense. Like, father time has not caught up to him, even at, you know, he's turning 36 in a few months.
Right.
So he, you know, he put more effort in during the regular season this year than he had in years past. But he still has that extra gear that he can hit in the playoffs. And, you know, I think it's, you're used to seeing him. You're like, oh man, he's already so great. Like, how can he hit this next level? It's like, oh, right. Yeah. He has that, you know, we've seen it over and over and over again where it's like, okay, he's averaging, you know, almost a 30-point triple double, but he could do even more than that. And I think we saw that in the finals in particular. Like, whatever they needed, he was able to do.
And that really goes to show how you need a top 5 player in order to win a championship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need those guys who are all-around players in the sense of, you know, maybe my shot is not falling particularly well one night, but then I can go out and give you, like, 15 assists and 15 rebounds and tremendous defense. Like, you just need those caliber of players to win. I mean, hell, we saw Jimmy Butler as well. I mean, there were nights where, you know, he wasn't cooking necessarily scoring wise, where he just became a playmaker. He averaged 10 assists mm-hmm. for the series. I mean, and 8 rebounds. Like, he was fantastic. And I know we'll get back to him because, you know, maybe the Sixers should have tried to re-sign him.
Maybe.
That could have, maybe, just maybe. No, but I, you know, it's LeBron is fantastic. And I do think that, remember those old MTV shows where you had celebrities go up in like a death match, but they were animated like clay
yeah.
figures?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We should have one of those with LeBron fighting Father Time. Just, that would be perfect. Because you're right. I mean, this isn't logical, what he's doing. And I think some of this is the old San Antonio Spurs thing. You know, how many, you know, so many years people are like, oh, this is the year where they can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that is the thing with LeBron. Like, ultimately, you're like, he's really old now.
Right, right.
Like, he's actually really, really old. Maybe it's time. Guess not, man. I mean, age 35? Like, he's the same age as Jordan was in 98. And I will say, though, you know, LeBron is not, you know, 2012 LeBron. You can see that. The athleticism is a little bit diminished, but he's a smarter player, and it's the same thing you saw with Jordan and Bird and Magic. Well Bird did have the back injury, so he had to compensate for that as well, but all of those guys, they grew smarter as they grew older. So like, when their body started telling them, you know, tonight I can't have a 40-inch vertical, mm-hmm. they were like, okay, then let's scale it back, let's see what we can do, make the right reads, make the right cuts, make the right decisions all the time, let's just chip this out. And credit to LeBron, he did that. So I have no idea what to expect here from the Lakers moving forward. The only thing I want to say is I really hope for their sake that Kyle Kuzma is not on the roster next year.
Oh,
because interesting. He was just horrid. Just horrid.
Well, I guess so. That's a good way for us to seg into kind of what's next for these teams. Yeah. We can start with the Lakers. I think it's safe to say that Anthony Davis will not be leaving LA, probably. He does have
you mean the thousands upon thousands of Bulls fans who are photoshopping him into a Bulls jersey are going to get disappointed, Brian? How dare you?
I will say it would be hilarious if he did pull a Kawhi and is like, all right, I won my title. I'm out. I'm going to go join Jimmy in Miami.
Oh, that one in particular would be... That would be tremendous.
Right?
Could you imagine Lakers fans during the entirety of the offseason on Twitter?
It would be, like, I'm secretly rooting for it just because I think it would be so funny.
My God.
To be clear, I'm not saying this. I'm saying the opposite is going to happen. He's going resign. I don't know what he's going to do, that, you know, in terms of a 5-year max versus a 1+1 and wait for the cap to even out, but he's a Laker for life. Like, he's not leaving, but the whole, until he signs the contract, I want the possibility hanging over Lakers Nation, because I just think it'd be so funny.
Hey, Jimmy, I saw what you did, and you're younger than LeBron. I'm going to stay with you for at least a couple of years.
Right? Like, the Heat's supporting cast is younger, it's all I'm saying.
Oh, that's true. That is true. So right before we wrap that up, by the way, before we go into like the offseason, can we just talk about Jimmy Butler? Because, you know, you and I made the joke, because I was a former Bulls fan. You are on the... I don't know if you're still a Sixers fan or if you're still like on the fence a little bit, but, you know, we are lovers scorn. You know, yeah. we have both had Jimmy Butler on our favorite team's roster. And then we've seen that team completely mess it up, and now we're seeing him flourish under new circumstances. Like, we are, you know, that ex-boyfriend. We're those ex-boyfriends looking on Instagram and just going through maniacally, going, "Aw, they seem so happy." Like, what the hell happened here?
Bad management. I think that's the easiest way to say it. I mean, he went to a team with... a well-run team with good management, good coaching, and a good supporting cast. And they knew how to maximize his talent. And, you know, he was two wins away from quelling, like, that was the Bulls' big concern with him, right? Like, can he be the number one option on a title team? He was two wins away from proving he could.
God. My man. Okay, well, so here's my follow-up to Jimmy, right? So some people are pointing out on Twitter, you know, that they didn't win, and because of that, you could justify why the Bulls wouldn't want to pay him the Supermax. Now, I still think that that's a ludicrous way of looking at things, because obviously, when you have a player of that caliber who can take you that far and who has virtually no weakness outside of not being a good three-point shooter, like, and he plays the wing position, the most attractive way to play or position to play in the NBA, you know, how can you justify not picking that up?
So I think there's a difference between can he be the best player on a title team and do you want to pay him a supermax?
All right.
I mean, this goes back to my point about, like, there are too many max guys, there are too many guys on supermax. You know, like, which supermax is aged well except for Curry and Harden? Like, John right. Wall sure didn't. Russell Westbrook well, sure didn't.
No, but let's just be honest here. Wall was an injury-related issue, right? We have no idea how Wall would have looked had he not gotten one of the most devastating injuries you can get as a basketball player.
I still don't think that contract would have aged well.
Well, but so I actually agree with you on that, but I'm just saying we don't know. Wall was a 23-10 guy at one point with great defense. And you and I were recording an episode less than 2 years ago where we were basically singing his praises and we were going, this guy's getting better, like a lot better. So what if that trajectory had gone the right way and the injury hadn't slowed it? Then we would have looked at John Wall in a different light, I think.
It's possible. I mean, I think he's a guy who is just, a lot of his greatness was reliant on athleticism.
That's fair,
So if that started to slip, if he loses a half a step, I mean, he's not a great shooter. And, you know, you could somewhat say the same thing about Jimmy. Like, I mean, maybe the Bulls are just worried about the Thibodeau miles on his legs.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, this is year one of his four-year contract. Right now, it looks really bad for every team that gave up on him. 2 years down the line, we'll see. But
he didn't get a Supermax. It should be worth noting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but who's to say that he would have, you know, even if the Bulls didn't offer him a Supermax, just offered him a normal max, but it's still an extra year, 8% raises over 5%. Who's to say he doesn't take that? You know, right. I don't think there's a range between we have to offer a Supermax and he's walking and, oh, okay, we could just, you know, we're not going to like sign him to a mid-level exception. Like, he could very easily have just gotten a normal max and been fine with that, because that's what he ended up doing.
But I'll say as much, though, when it comes to Jimmy. Now we see that value. Maybe Jimmy is going to be, you know, the example that teams will bring up. Like, if you are a team and you have a good, solid wing player who plays both ends of the floor, and you're uncertain of whether or not he's worth a certain contract, like, maybe now Jimmy is the example you go to and you say, okay, look, Jimmy Butler took his team in the first year to the NBA Finals and was two games away from winning a ring because the team in question optimized his surroundings. They made sure to build a team that directly affected and optimized his playing style. So if there are teams out there who haven't done that with their player, maybe now's the time to really look themselves in the eyes and go, you know what? We need to make a stronger effort in making sure that our primary guy is being taken care of in the sense that our roster construction suits his abilities.
Yeah, if nothing else, I think it'll make teams more reluctant to give up on two-way wings in general. I think these playoffs really emphasize the importance of that type of player. Right. So if you have one, you're going to do whatever you can to make sure that player stays with you as long as possible.
Right, exactly. And again, we've been talking about the wing all year. I think this has been the theme for the 2019-2020 season, right? Just the wing. The wing has really established themselves as the primary position in the NBA because it's the versatility, it's the fact that you can get ball handling from that position. Like, the guard has been somewhat de-emphasized. I think I'm actually going to write about this for Forbes. I wonder if you, outside of, like, Steph Curry, for example, can you even build around a point guard in today's league? Steph Curry is arguably a top 10 player of all time. So mm-hmm. that is not the norm. Like, if you get a guy like John Morant, that's one thing I have right now is I love John Morant. I love Trae Young. Can you build around those guys? And can you build, or rather, can you build a championship contender around them? That's, I think that's a question that you need to ask yourself now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll just depend on their supporting cast moving forward. But I think, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, how many of the last, you know, it's hard to separate between, like, what was the reason these teams won. But, you know, the last 6, 7, 8, 9 I'm like thinking back to the 2011 Mavericks, I think, were the last team that didn't have an elite two-way wing. Like the Heat, 2012 and 13 had LeBron, Kawhi in 2014 with the Spurs. I guess 2015 with the Warriors.
Yeah.
Harry B was not an elite wing, but then LeBron in 2016, KD 2017-18, Kawhi 2019 with the Raptors, and now 2020 Lakers. So yeah, it's, you know, 8 of the last 10 champions have featured one of LeBron, KD, or Kawhi.
Well, actually, if you go back to Orlando in 2009, you know, you still have Rashard Lewis and Hedo Turkoglu. So you, I know defensively they weren't there, but Hedo Turkoglu was a 6'10 point forward. Yeah. So you still had that the play initiator from the forward spot, and you had Rashard Lewis, you know, who's like 6'10", 6'11", hitting, what, 3 triples a game. So those two guys were actually a little bit ahead of their time when you look at the league today. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if we go back to final contenders over the past 20 years, we're probably going to realize, oh, that there was something hidden right in plain sight. Like,
right.
there was a playmaking wing. Like, even if you go to the Warriors, I know they had Harry B., but then you had Andre Iguodala, who could defend and initiate the offense. I know he couldn't score, but he couldn't do virtually everything else.
Well, like, and Draymond.
He was a crucial wing. And Draymond, right. Yeah, I know he played the four, but he essentially plays like a wing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And I raised this question to a friend the other day. Like, maybe we're going to be looking at a league in a few years' time where basically the starting lineup consists of 5, 6, 7 guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what Boston is moving toward, right?
It sure as hell looks that way, and Houston as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it worked to some extent for both teams. I think, again, you're going to have some change-up in there, but,
right,
you know, if you get enough really versatile guys, if you get enough guys who can shoot, dribble, and pass, it's probably going to work out well for you. Like, the more that all of your... Yeah, and rebound. Like, the more that all of your players can do, the more versatile you're going to be, even with size deficiencies or athleticism deficiencies, whatever.
Yeah. No, I agree. Okay, so, sorry. That was just a switch up. So, back to the off-season preview.
Yeah. So, Lakers, we'll assume Anthony Davis stays with them in some capacity, whether it's a 1+1 just because of the cap situation or a 5-year deal. I mean, as funny as it would be, like, he's not leaving LeBron after just winning a title.
No, I don't think so either.
KCP has an $8.5 million player option. Avery Bradley, $5 million. JaVale McGee, $4.2 million. Rajon Rondo, $2.7 million. I think any of those guys, maybe JaVale probably won't opt out because I don't know if he's getting that much money on the open market, but like any of those other guys could.
Yeah.
Which one, if all of them do opt out, which ones would you prioritize bringing back if you're the Lakers?
So I'm actually looking at Basketball Reference where it says that Bradley is locked up for next year, but he has a player option?
According to Basketball Insiders, but I will check. I'm pretty sure. I'll check Spotrac to be safe.
Okay. Because, like, Bradley would be the one I would prioritize. Which sounds ludicrous considering he wasn't even in the bubble. But, you know, he's a great defender. And at that, you know, at that point, you know, if he opts out, I would want to get him back. And again, he didn't even play in the playoffs. He wasn't a part of their championship run, but I think he would ultimately be their third best player. I mean, you and I said as much before we went into the playoffs that they were missing their third best player. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to be relevant next year, though. Is he still going to be that guy? Who's to say?
Yeah, I did confirm he is a $5 million player option. So
okay.
Yeah. I don't know that he does necessarily opt out, but I would agree with you. If I had to prioritize, I'd say him. And I mean, KCP, inconsistent, but he is a good long range shooter, and they really need, you know, they learned their lesson in 2018-19, where it's like, we're just going to put LeBron on this team that we currently have, and we aren't going to necessarily surround him with shooters, and that did not work out very well for them.
Right.
So, you know, last offseason, they learned their lesson, brought in Danny Green, have KCP in there as well. I think they're going to prioritize those two guys for sure. I mean, if Rondo is willing to come back on a min deal again, I'm sure they'd be happy to have him, but I don't see them breaking the bank for Rondo.
No, nor should they. One good finals clinching game is not going to make the difference.
Right. And McGee, I mean, you know, though, I forget who mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, but you know, now the theory is like, okay, well, now that they won the title, you know, this is proof of concept. All of these ring chasing vets are going to want to go to LA. And someone mentioned, like, would Tristan Thompson be willing to go take a min deal to play with them?
Huh.
So if he does, you know, and JaVale opts out, they're right. Probably saying good riddance to JaVale McGee at that point.
Yeah. I actually like McGee on some level. I think he's underrated to some extent, just in terms of statistical production. He's still a nutcase sometimes, but he does seem to have matured a little bit. So I'm not as down on him as people generally are. But at $4.2 million, yeah, I think it's reasonable to say you could probably fill that out pretty easily, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. How overpaid is Danny Green, by the way, at this point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, luckily he's only under contract for one more year. But
right.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting 2 years, $30
million
again.
No, sure. Hope not, because I mean, he had a not very good year. Just not only shooting the ball, but like just being Danny Green. Like he defensively, he was really hot and cold. Like I don't know. I whenever I watched them play, I just felt Danny Green was one of those guys who had taken a step down. Like maybe because of his age, he is 33 after all. Like he's no spring chicken, and it seems like it's showing now.
I promise you, every Lakers fan feels the same way, as evidenced by the death threats that he got after Game 5. But yeah,
which was still not okay, obviously, because that's ridiculous. Yeah,
right. But yeah, I think a lot of Lakers fans are probably a bit out on Danny Green. I think it's safe to say. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately for them, he is under contract for one more year, so you're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get out of the Danny Green business, but Markieff Morris and Dwight Howard are both unrestricted free agents this offseason.
Mm.
Which of those guys, if either, would you try to bring back for the Lakers?
I actually like what Dwight did. Like he understood a role, and if he's willing to come back for, you know, the minimum salary once again, sure. Why not? And Markieff Morris is a difficult one for me because, you know, let me just be painfully clear here. I do not like the Morai twins. I really don't. I think they are boneheaded players who have this really mean-spirited way of playing. Like, they'll throw that elbow that is just so unnecessary. And I think they get away with much more than they actually they should. So I don't like them on a personal level because of the way that they play. Having said that, both of those guys are timely shooters, which in today's league you need, and they're a stretch force, and they can even slide up to the five. They're very similar in that way. And Markieff Morris did that for the Lakers this year, and it worked well. So given his age, he's, 31, 32 years old, it kind of makes sense to bring him back, right?
I think so. I mean, I think ultimately a lot of these decisions for the Lakers are going to be like, are you willing to come back either at the min, or, you know, if we have your bird rights, like, we can use those, but we're not going to tap into our any exceptions. I don't think they'd want to spend their entire mid-level exception on Markieff Morris.
No, nor should they. Because, right. again, the sample size is also pretty small. He only played 14 games for him in the regular season. So, mm-hmm. you know, you don't really have that much knowledge about him fitting in long-term with the Lakers. We saw what he did in the playoffs, which was positive, at least when he was producing offensively. But yeah, no, I wouldn't break the bank for him whatsoever. I mean, we're talking about a min deal here.
Right. But the other point is they most likely will have, I think the entire, depending on where the cap comes in and what they do with some of these guys, but it seems likely that they will have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception in an offseason where very few teams have cap space at all. Right. And, you know, a few of the other top-tier title contenders are likely going to be in the tax and are only going to have the taxpayer MLE. So, you know, the Lakers might have a leg up over a lot of the other title contenders in terms of who they can sign with that, with that exception. Who do you think would be a good fit for them? We don't even need to name names necessarily, but, like, what type of player should they be going after? Like, what are their weaknesses that they need to shore up?
Well, they need shooting at the guard spot, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think that is pretty much one of the primary things. You know, they started, let me just look this up so I don't end up saying something wrong, but I'm pretty sure that during the entirety of the finals, they did not start a point guard, right? Like a traditional point guard?
Well, it depends if you qualify Caruso as a point guard. Because they start Caruso at game six.
Yeah, he's a six. Yeah, well, Basketball Reference does list him as a point guard. I don't really view him that way.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, okay, he's over the course of his career, he started 61% of his game or played 61% of his minutes at point guard. That's fair. When I watch him play, I don't see a point guard. I see a two who is more of a defensive-oriented hustle player. So he's not, at the very least, he's not a traditional point guard.
Right, for sure.
And so over the course of this series, it was Danny Green and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in the backcourt. And then game six, one of those guys moved up to the three. I'm guessing that was Caldwell-Pope. But yeah, I would look for a point guard.
Well, that's tough because there just aren't. I mean, Fred VanVleet, but he's obviously not going to take the MLE to sign.
Right.
The Lakers. I mean, Goran Dragic would be probably the next best option on the market, but I just don't see him leaving Miami at this point, right?
Oh, we'll make a sign and trade. Anthony Davis the one way and Goran Dragic the other way. That fits, right?
That works, yeah. So,
no, but you're right. I mean, that would, if Goran Dragic is fully healthy by next year, which I think he will be, this wasn't like one of those long-term injuries.
Yeah.
And he was willing to sign with the Lakers for, you know, a discount of what he's worth. Oh boy, because he can play both on the ball and off the ball, so you could take pressure off LeBron, but he would also function as a spot-up shooter. I mean, mm-hmm. that would not be bad. One guy I have looked at, and I just need to look up his contract situation. Give me a second, and it's slightly out there, but I think that could work. And that's Kai Bowman, unless he is locked up. Oh yeah, he's locked up. Never mind. From the Golden State Warriors, otherwise. Mm-hmm. If they decide not to keep Bowman around, I think they will be. Because next season again for Bowman is actually non-guaranteed. So if the Warriors decide, we're going to move on, he would be a guy I would target aggressively if I'm the Lakers. Because, you know, he seems like one of those Derek Fisher type guys to me. You know, a guy who can come in, play defense, and hit the three. You don't really need someone to come in and dominate the ball when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis at your disposal. You just need to be able to play off those guys. And, you know, the Bowman caliber player would definitely, you know, be something interesting there. But, I would venture a guess that the Golden State Warriors are going to be hanging on to him.
Yeah. I mean, again, the point guard market, we went over it, I think, back when the season was on hiatus. We did positional rankings for all five positions in free agency, and it was like Fred VanVleet, Goran Dragic, and then giant gulf between those two guys and the next best option. You know, you're looking at Jeff Teague. I think Jordan Clarkson would be interesting.
Oh, back to L.A.? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he could be kind of that missing, like, sixth man for them.
You're really going back to the sixth man as just a scorer, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it would give them some semblance of scoring off the bench, reliable scoring off the bench.
That's true. It would be such a huge loss for Utah, though.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
DJ Augustine, maybe?
Oh, I like that. I like that. He's a little bit small, though. Not great defensively.
Yeah, you would have to hide him on that end.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's what they even want. I mean, I think they started, you know, Danny Green and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for a reason. They could have started Rajon Rondo if they wanted to. So I think they prefer size and defensive ability, right?
Yeah. I mean, Chris Dunn is an RFA, but I don't think a mid-level gets him out of Chicago.
Well.
Or maybe.
So, no, this is just what I've been told by Denver guys. You know, because Denver guys told me Chris Dunn is not a Arturis Karnišovas player.
Oh,
whatsoever.
Yeah.
So he might find himself on the unrestricted free agency market. In which case, there are two Los Angeles clubs that will be aggressively hunting him.
Yeah. All right. Well, then that's an option.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, other like Delhi is up there. I mean, I cannot stress enough how bleak the free agent market is at point guard. If you want a point guard this summer and you don't have money for Fred VanVleet or Goran Dragic, go to the draft instead.
But ultimately, we can boil this down to one thing, or two things, rather. If you are the Lakers and you're looking for a point guard, you're going to have to boil things down to one, size, and two, shooting ability. So Chris Dunn, like we talked about, is not a shooter, but he is a defender. So you can argue what's more important in that way, but he's got the size. So size is one of the most important things. And then if you find a guy who is so defensively out-talenting everyone else that you survive, that you want to say, okay, we'll survive without the shooting, then we'll go that route. But otherwise, the priority has to be shooting. Like, it's LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You need to flank them with shooting. It's just a necessity.
Yeah. I mean, long story short is that the Lakers are in fantastic shape moving forward. You know, we'll see what happens with their supporting cast, which guys they're able to bring back. But they have that big exception to dangle out there. They're going to be an enticing landing spot, even if they didn't win the title. But the fact they did is going to make them even more enticing. So I would expect the Lakers are going to be right back next year where they were this year, among that very top tier of title contenders. No guarantee that they win, but you know that they'll be right back in that upper class of title favorites.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's go to the Heat then, because they are... I wrote something at Forbes in February, like right after the trade deadline, pre-COVID, pre-finals run, where I said they were the wild card of free agency after the Justice Winslow trade, because that freed up a lot of cap space for them. They were projected to have north of $20 million when the cap was supposed to be $115 million. We'll see where it lands, but regardless, they're going to be the only good team with cap space this summer, or this offseason. Like, Atlanta is the only other interesting team with cap space, and the rest are, you know, it's like Detroit, Charlotte, New York, just absolute going nowhere teams.
Before you go that far, remember, though, Jay Crowder needs to be taken care of. I have to assume that they want to keep him around.
So that is part of it. It Dragic too. So I mean, they have cap space, and you know they could go after a guy like Danilo Gallinari was the guy I floated way back when, just because of their interest at the trade deadline. And you know there was that quote circulating yesterday where Danilo was like, "I'm prioritizing chasing a championship over money." And it's like, dude, if that was true, you would have just been on the Heat and you probably would have just won a ring. because like they were in deep negotiations with Gallinari at the trade deadline, and apparently the breakdown was, you know, he wanted an extension to agree to the trade, but he wanted it beyond 2021, and they wanted to do with him what they did with Andre Iguodala, where it's like, okay, we'll extend you for 2 years, but the 2021's a team option or non-guaranteed or whatever, and we can get out of it if, you know, we get wind that Giannis is coming or Kawhi is coming, whatever.
Well, that doesn't mean we know that you know, Gallinari demanded a lot of money. He just wanted long-term security. I'm not saying he was like willing to sign a minimum for 2 or 3 years, but what if he was like, okay, all I want is $8 million a year, but you have to lock me up until like at least the end of 2022.
Well, they would have done that because they're projected to have more than a max spot in 2021.
Oh, okay. I think it would be money. Okay, well then I was wrong on my quote tweet because I saw that too, and I like made an asterisk and said Miami Heat forward Danilo Gallinari. But that's fair. Right. That's fair. That might be a little bit more difficult if it's the money that catches up. Or maybe he had a change of heart. Like maybe
It very well might be, and I think, you know, that would be the big swing, or like a Davis Bertans could be a big swing for them as well. But the Heat do also have to prioritize, or I guess that's the question now, right? You were two wins from a title. Mm-hmm. You have made very clear through a number of leaks in the media that your grand plan is 2021 free agency, Giannis or another superstar.
Right.
We'll see what happens with Giannis, whether he signs the Supermax extension this offseason or not. But given where they are, do you think they should be willing to, like, let's say Gallinari, you know, is full of crap and he says all of this stuff about chasing a ring, whatever, but like he still wants that same deal where it's like, hey, you can sign me this offseason, but I want at least a 2-year deal that's gonna prevent you from having full max space in 2021. If you're the Heat, do you do that? No. Knowing how close you were this year?
No, and for one reason. One thing that's been spoken up in the or really been brought up in the media a lot. You and I knew it. A lot of people knew it, but now it's become more known worldwide. And it's the culture of the Miami Heat. You know, you and I have spoken to guests on this show who've brought that up repeatedly. But the average NBA fan viewed Miami as just another NBA destination. But their culture has just been such a warm topic all year long that I have to assume that certain players in the NBA were like, oh, well, we knew that they had a good culture, but this is something else. I mean, look at Jimmy Butler, how much he's raving about this. Like, this is a man who can't shut up whatsoever, and all he's talking about is this culture. Now, you know, it's the old, you know, Django Unchained quote, like, gentlemen, you had my attention, now you have my curiosity.
Yeah,
I think that could be one of those things. So if the Miami Heat is suddenly, you know, in a position where they can attract tremendous talent in 2021, then no, they shouldn't sacrifice that cap space on someone like Gallinari. I will say, though, you know, you brought up the Davis Bertans. Regardless of what he's going to demand, I don't know what he's going to demand, but if you could sign him for that deal instead of Gallinari, whew, boy. I mean, Duncan Robinson and Davis Bertans on the same team? With Jimmy Butler feeding them?
And Tyler Hero.
Well, Tyler Hero, I love Tyler Hero, but he's not one of those, you know, let's hit the three ball at like 43% on like 10 attempts per night.
Yeah.
Like, like those two stand out a little bit. But I hear you. Like next year, Tyler Hero might become that player. Who knows? But
yeah, I mean, good Lord. As a rookie, 38.9% on 5.4 attempts per game. Like, I don't think he's far away from it.
No, I hear you. I hear you. It might actually be next year. It could be. I'm definitely not downplaying it. But just having those guys, and then Jimmy in the middle of it, and maybe if Bam comes into the action and starts hitting threes as well, oh, good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That could be interesting. So I think they will have to look at the momentary fit. So the next year, at least, they are going to have to upgrade in some respect. And then they have to figure out, how much are we willing to sacrifice in terms of our 2021 money and what are we willing to sacrifice come 2021 in terms of players that we don't retain? You know, already this season they have to make a call on Derek Jones Jr., which I unfortunately would imagine that he's going to get enough interesting offers elsewhere that the Heat are probably going to let him walk. But he's a good piece. I know that he didn't play a lot in the playoffs necessarily, but he's still a good player. He's just young and he's raw. There's a lot to like there. There's a reason he played over 23 minutes per game this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely outcome for the Heat, rather than go after a Gallo or Bertans, because if they do, they probably lose one of Dragic or Crowder. Uh-huh. Like, I just don't think there's enough. You know, to keep Dragic, like, they're going to have, let's say, $20 million in space, but if you keep their bird rights, you're going to have their cap hold on their books. So if you relinquish their cap hold, then you relinquish their bird rights and you can't go over the cap to re-sign them. You'd have to use an exception to re-sign them.
Correct.
So, you know, juggling this puzzle, I think, would be the challenging part for Miami if they did want to make a splash in free agency. So I think ultimately what they do is re-sign Dragic and Crowder to one-year deals or one-plus-one deals. And then they'll still, like the Lakers, they will very likely have the full non-taxpayer mid-level at their disposal. So right. They, you know, that might price them out of a Gallo or a Bertans, but I would assume this run opened a lot of eyes, as you said, around the league, and probably makes Miami, assuming it doesn't get overrun with COVID, makes it one of the more appealing free agent destinations this offseason. You know, just knowing that we could sign, all right, all of these teams have a non-taxpayer, but like the Lakers and the Heat were the ones in the finals. Let's, you know, compared to Boston and Milwaukee, both of whom are very likely going to be in the tax.
Yeah.
Let's get a couple million more, go to South Beach, have no state tax, and, you know, get indoctrinated with this Heat culture.
Well, and not only that, Brian, there's another component of this that we seem to be forgetting, which is, you know, the Heat, very much like the Raptors, you know, are pretty good at finding these bargain bin players. So I think for them, given that they also have this tremendous culture in place, you know, there's something to be said about going out and scouring the G League. I mean, look, they found Duncan Robinson out of nowhere. Why not, you know, go out and see if you can, like, duplicate that success? G League, internationally, there are lots of places to pick players from. They also have the 20th pick. I mean, when I'm looking at this Miami team, I would be absolutely flabbergasted if that team doesn't come back next year even stronger, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's... to some extent, that is a question that we could tackle later this offseason. But, you know, yes, I think the fact not only that they have been good at finding these gems, but also, like, a lot of these guys are pretty young. I mean, Tyler Hero and Bam are, like, not even in their primes yet. Duncan Robinson, same deal. So I think that will also make the Heat more attractive, is, like, for free agents, it's not only, okay, we'll join a team that can win a ring next year. It's like, oh, okay, we can join a team that should be set up pretty well for the next 2, 3, 4 years, and who knows what they do next summer. So, you know, I think it just adds to the allure of the Heat. But I agree with you that next year they probably will come back stronger. But, you know, I do think we need to keep one eye on, as grand as their 2021 plans are, that's also Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn will be free agents then.
Well, with low cap holds.
Yeah. But, you know, that's just money you're going to have to spend on them at some point.
Well, of course, but that's down the road. I mean, it's all about timing when it comes to free agents. So if they have a low cap hold, obviously you sign whoever you find, like be that Giannis or someone else. And then afterwards, that's when you go into the guys that are restricted free agents. And yeah, you sort of sort it out there. Which is also interesting for this year, just to wrap that up. Because, like, let's say, against all logic, that Goran Dragic is willing to come back for the min. Like, you just signed him up to that immediately, because then that replaces his cap hold, which is, I don't have it in front of me, but that's, like, insane, right? Because he was earning, like, $19 million this year. So his cap hold was what? 20-something?
Yeah. Oh, if he's willing to come back for anything that, like, allows you to have cap space and that you could sign a free agent and then use the MLE on Jay Crowder, great.
Right.
But I don't think that's very likely.
No, no, but I'm just, it was more of an example of how it yeah. works. Like, you always want to make sure that you sign a guy to what is lower than his cap hold if he's a veteran, for example.
Right. And the other thing that Miami at least needs to consider this offseason is Bam Adebayo becomes eligible for an extension. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, this goes back to the cap hold discussion. You can sign him now, and then his extension will kick in right away. Or you can wait until he becomes a restricted free agent. He will only have a $7 million cap hold, or $7.1 million. So that will effectively free up 20-some million in cap space temporarily.
Right.
And then you can re-sign him afterward. You just need to make sure that he's on board with that plan and that, you know, he doesn't get a wandering eye and sign like a shorter term offer right. sheet with another team, because then you probably cost yourself a year or two of team control on Bam.
Exactly. So. Exactly. It's a bit of a puzzle, but I do think that he can figure it out though. Like, it's
yeah.
If there's a team out there I'm just not worried about, it's the Heat.
Right. Well, because I think he's now their GM technically. Andy Ellsberg is one of the league's, you know, most renowned cap people.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that they were able, they entered last offseason without cap space and worked their way into getting Jimmy Butler. So like, they are very adept at, you know, working all of the angles that you can. So I'm not concerned about the Heat's long-term future. Like, I think they're set up very well. It's just, there is going to be a tricky order of operations going on both this offseason and next offseason, that, you know, they'll need to hit those moves in the right order to really maximize their ceiling moving forward.
Right. I totally agree.
So, Mort, let's wrap up by just kind of talking about what's next, because we are, you know, we are entering an unprecedented offseason, A, that's starting in the middle of October instead of June. So we know the NBA draft is on November 18th. Mm-hmm. And that is it. We know absolutely nothing else.
Oh, don't get me laughing right now. I'm sick. You a-hole.
I'm sorry, but that's just, we know free agency will happen at some point.
Yep.
After the draft, presumably. It sounds like probably right around December 1st. I don't think the NBA wants to trample on Thanksgiving like it usually does with July 4th. So my best guess would be free agency, you know, right toward the end of November, beginning of December. Mm-hmm. We also don't know when the next season is going to start. And I think, you know, Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts have made it very clear they're at the mercy of the coronavirus right now. Numbers are going up again throughout the United States, and that was always the big concern with the fall, was, you know, as the fall and winter, I should say, and as more people, you know, you can't necessarily eat outside anymore, like do as many outdoor activities as it gets colder. So people are going to be inside more often and clustered together more often. That's kind of the formula for these big super spreader events. So they've said it's going to be no earlier than Christmas. But, you know, Michelle Roberts floated MLK Day as a possible, which is middle of January, as the possible start of next season. So, it, you know, if educated guess, I would not expect to see any more basketball in 2020.
No. I would be extremely surprised if that happens. I mean, no, I think we have to just make do with the EuroLeague. Because, you know, basketball over here has started again. So they're actually playing mm-hmm. their 2020-2021 season right now. So maybe now's the time to go scouting for international players. And speaking of, Nikola Mirotic just tested positive for the coronavirus, as did wow. another former Real Madrid player, only not in that sport, Cristiano Ronaldo as well. So
really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. Well, I saw Pekovic too has it, right?
Yeah, so we actually need to... So this is a weird situation. So Nikola Pekovic apparently, from what I saw, was fighting for his life. And then there was mm-hmm. a report came out, said, oh, it's actually not that bad. But then a third report came out saying, yeah, it actually is that bad. So I don't know. And in the middle of it, I found out that apparently he'd been a drug supplier. It's a very weird situation. Very, very weird Nikola Pekovic week for me.
Yikes. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, all I just saw the one report about him having it and may or may not be hospitalized. So,
yo, he should have been on a respirator for a while. I think he was at the hospital or he's been at the hospital for like 20 days.
Jeez.
And he's breathing through, a respirator. So,
well, that is scary. And I mean, that kind of just goes to underscore, like, this is the uncertainty that we're going to be dealing with for a while. I think, you know, the NBA has made it clear that they want to play an 82-game season and normal playoffs next year. And they want fans back in arenas if possible, if it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adam Silver has been talking about some advancements with, like, rapid testing where you can get tested and then, you know, 10, 15 minutes later you find out if you have it or not. And if you don't, you can go in. And, you know, I don't think we're going to be at a point until, there's a mass vaccination that we have fully packed stadiums again, right, with no social distancing, no masks, whatever. I think we'll see reduced attendance. But, you know, they've also talked about we're willing to push the season back a little bit further if we see a medical advancement coming that mm-hmm. will allow more fans to be in the arena. Because, look, the NBA is a business. And, you know, Woj had the report earlier this year that fans in the arenas constitute 40% of the league's revenue. Mm-hmm. And that's a really tricky thing. I mean, you know, looking ahead to what's next, that's the number one thing that's next. And that's the thing that I'm keeping the closest eye on is, you know, Adam Silver says they've had a team like looking ahead to the 2020-2021 season for a while now, ever since July, and starting to lay the foundation of what it looks like and, you know, what the projected revenue is. But that them and the NBPA need to now meet and really kind of go over the grim financial perspective of what to expect next year. I don't know how you do it because of all of the uncertainty. I think it's a real, you know, usually you set the salary cap based on what your projected revenue is going to be. And it's a pretty easy calculation because you're going to have an 82-game season. You're going to have fans in the stands. You're going to have, you know, your TV contracts aren't going to change. So you have a pretty good sense of how much money you're expecting the league to make.
Yeah.
Next year, I don't know how you plan for, are we going to have an 82-game season? How many fans are we going to have if we have fans at all? So I think you can plan for the worst-case scenario of, all right, we're going to have this many games, and, you know, this is the baseline with no fans in the stands, and then this is the baseline with all teams, you know, just full capacity. So you can plan for those two, and then maybe you find a middle ground and say, like, this is for if we have 25% attendance for part of the year, whatever. But there's just going to be a lot more uncertainty with regard to how much money the league is expected to make, and that's going to factor into the salary cap picture that we've been alluding to for months now. You know, usually the cap is based on projected revenue. From all reports, the two sides are probably not going to do that this year because it's just impossible to project, and they're instead going to just agree, we're going to set the cap at this level. So, you know, reports suggest it's probably just going to stay flat at the level it was this year, $109 million or so. But then, you know, they've got to make up the difference somewhere. Like, the owners aren't just going to take this loss because players' contracts are already on the books. Like, they are a fixed cost. So we'll probably see the increased escrow where, you know, they withhold a higher percentage of player salaries next year as kind of a, this is our backup plan in case we don't make as much money as we think we will. We're going to make sure that you guys share some of the losses too.
Right.
But there's a lot to work out in the coming days and weeks, and it's going to have a big trickle-down effect on the rest of the offseason.
Yep.
So, you know, if you are bored by this stuff, I don't blame you. But, you know, these are the details that are going to be pretty important to keep an eye out for between, you know, now and the draft. Because I think no matter what, the NBA almost has to have this locked in place. Usually, you know, that there are cap projections throughout the year, but they don't set the official amount until after the draft in that July moratorium. This year, I think they almost have to set it before just to give teams a sense of, all right, what are we working with going into the draft when there could be a ton of trades and then going into free agency? Because like teams aren't going to be able to make deals if it's like, oh, well, the cap could be $109 million or it could be $85
million. Yeah, exactly.
We just don't know.
No, no. And we've talked about this before. This is just a requirement, I think. The league has to be ahead of schedule when it comes to salary cap projections to teams. They have to give them that information. And that's partly, I think, why they decided to, or not officially yet, but they were talking about freezing the cap for next year, right? And I have to assume that's why. Just to give their teams a chance to go, you know what, we'll take the hit from this year, so now you can at least plan for that number going ahead to 2020-21 season. But yeah, you're right. After that, it becomes the Wild Wild West again. There's so many factors up in the air. You know, what if a vaccine doesn't kick in? Like, what if what if the infection mutates and becomes something else? There's so many things to take into account here that we're probably going to be dealing this for a handful of years still.
I think financially, from the NBA's perspective, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, I think I would almost hope that the NBA also gives, you know, when they set the 2020-2021 cap, I hope they give updated projections of 2021-22 as well, just to give teams some sense of, you know, the original projection for this upcoming season before COVID happened was $115 million. That's very clearly, it's not going to be $115 million. The projection for 2021 was $125 million. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that as well. It wouldn't surprise me if that's more close to the $110, $115 million range as well. So, you know, it's just really, like, I don't envy any of these cap guys in front offices right now, because, you know, long-term team building requires planning years in advance and, you know, knowing the financial landscape a couple years in ahead of, like, okay, this is what we can expect, so we can make these moves now and we're still going to have X amount of cap space 3 years down the road. There's just no way to know that right now, and it's going to be really tough for teams to make long-term plans knowing this. I think I'm going to write about this at Forbes. You know, I think it wouldn't surprise me if the next dynasty rises from all of this uncertainty, where a team with a ton of flexibility like Atlanta or like Memphis next
offseason.
I was
just about to mention Atlanta. Oh, damn you for writing that article. That's what I wanted to take. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, it's just like, you're probably going to walk into a position this offseason where, you know, that this free agent class is not great by any means, but there are a couple good players and they're going to be nowhere for these guys to sign except on bad teams. So it wouldn't shock me if Atlanta got a couple guys at below market value, at least relative to what we would have thought 8 or 9 months ago.
Oh, and man, then they could be loaded at the end of the offseason.
Yeah, and then, you know, who's to say it's not going to be the same deal next year too? Yeah. Or like, who's, you know, they were reluctant to give John Collins a max extension. John Collins' agent, I hope, is looking at this financial landscape and is like, oh, you know, I don't know that any team's going to be willing to give him a max extension. Maybe we just get like our 4 years, $80 million, and walk away happy right now. So, you know, all of these teams with a lot of financial flexibility moving forward may benefit, unfortunately, from there just not being that much money on the marketplace, or not as much money as we thought next summer on the marketplace. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it would not shock me. It's similar to the 2016 Warriors, where, you know, a unprecedented circumstances, in that case, the 1 year cap spike, allowed them to sign Kevin Durant and like extend that dynasty, or turn that already great team into a dynasty. Right. We could see something very similar happen this offseason.
We could. it's going to be interesting because, like you said, we could see a brand new power dynamic in the NBA over the next 3 years because of this.
Yeah, and then teams like the Sixers or even Boston, where they were planning for the cap to continue increasing, and then it doesn't, but they're already way, way capped out. Even the Warriors too, way over the tax line right now. Does it get to a point where you had these plans, but it's just too expensive to maintain all of these very high paid players and you have to start shedding salary?
Well, since you are going to be writing about this for Forbes and I'm not, I might as well give you my ideas for this so they can be included.
Okay.
Look, when you look at next year's salary, right, it's obviously Atlanta with the lowest payroll at $59 million. Then it's the Detroit Pistons at $71 million, and this is Charlotte Hornets at $80 million. Like, those three teams have been, I don't want to say they've been incompetent, because I don't think Atlanta has been incompetent. I think Detroit has been close to it, and I think Charlotte's been close to it. But this might actually be, because of these weird circumstances, the time for these three teams to turn around and become something other than, the bottom tier teams that they've been for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because players have nowhere to sign. So it's like, built that into your article, that would be extremely interesting.
Yeah.
And I'll piggyback off of that and write an article on my own, damn it.
Deal. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, it's just, there are a lot of really interesting questions that these unprecedented circumstances raise about teams' long-term plans until we know, again, it's hard to even project what's going to happen until we know what the cap is for next year and get an updated projection for what it is in 2021. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting offseason for a reason that I don't think a lot of teams are excited about.
You know who leads the league in money spent for the 2022-2023 season? It's
gotta be, I think, either Philly or the Warriors, right?
Yeah, that's your Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah. They have, from next season onwards, $147 million locked up for the next two seasons. And then when that drops down, because teams are reserving cap space for Giannis, uh-huh. For 2022, they're at $138, almost $139 million. The second closest team, the Rockets, is at $113.
Great.
You guys have virtually no cap space for the next
three years. They have no cap space. There's zero.
They have no cap
space.
Yeah, they have no cap. Well, I mean, what I mean is you can move stuff around, I think. But oh, God, this might actually be an opportunity for one of the highest, some of the highest paid teams to get rid of some of their contracts. Maybe someone calls up Atlanta and tells them, hey, you know what? We actually have a really good player here, but he's earning a ton of money and we're hemorrhaging money because of all this. We're desperate. Take him. We'll give you a pick. Here.
Well, that's the joke about the Rockets and Tillman. When does he salary dump James Harden?
Oh, James Harden next to Trae Young would be the worst defensive backcourt in the NBA, but offensively it'd be so fun.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't think they're going to salary dump James Harden yet. But, I mean, that is another thing you do have to factor in is a lot of these people who own NBA teams are also hemorrhaging money in their whatever business they had that allowed them to buy an NBA team. So as much as I joke about Tillman Fertitta, he is hemorrhaging money. He owns a ton of restaurants and casinos. He lost billions of dollars this year, I can only imagine. So
I don't feel bad.
No, definitely not. But I'm saying, that's going to possibly factor into some teams' decision making, or maybe we see people sell teams because they just don't have the capital to sustain, he's been very reluctant to pay the luxury tax as is, but is he even willing to field a roster that's bumping up against the luxury tax, knowing that next season we're not going to get the revenue that we typically do because we're not going to have a stadium of 20,000 fans every night?
And to complicate matters even more, some of these teams might end up being significantly in debt, which means that when they sell their teams, they're probably not going to just be selling them at all with a profit.
Right.
But they're selling them with a discount because they're going to be telling potential buyers, we have so much debt that you would actually inherit off of this. So you know, you might be able to get this franchise for, you know, a penny on the dollar.
Yeah.
And this is where smart businessmen and women can come in and go, well, we are in a, I'm earning my billions in a sustainable market. I own housing. I own ground. Something I've invested in green energy. I've like something that is sustainable. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Instead of casinos and hotels.
Yeah.
Like, they can come in. They're just buying their time. They're looking at the Rockets. They're looking for, like, a handful of teams. And they're going, well, I'm not losing money because I invested smartly. I'm secured.
Yeah.
So, and then they can come in and they can buy that team, you know, for very, very cheap. And then they can invest a ton of money into that team when everything turns around. There could be a lot of movement on this. Like, is your article going to cover all of this? Because I still need to write five this month.
we'll see. I can't promise. But yeah, we're going to be talking about this probably for the next month. It's going to be this and draft coverage because there are a lot of tendrils that can kind of branch out from what does all of this mean? Like, you know, teams have been building, assuming it's going to be $115 million or the original projection was $117 million cap. Shave $5 to $7 million off of that. It's not a huge deal this year necessarily, but again, if it trickles down into future years, 2021 and beyond, then a team like the Sixers, I think, is extremely screwed by this because they, you know, put together a super high paid roster that they're clearly willing to pay the tax, but how much tax are they willing to pay? Like, if you shave $5 to $7 million off of the cap projection, that is the taxpayer mid-level exception. So are they willing to now spend it knowing they are, you know, I think they're already $17 million over the projected tax line. So once you get into that $20 million over the tax line range, it gets really expensive to start spending money. So, like, you know, I was on the Hardwood Knox podcast, and they asked me, like, are the Sixers going to spend the taxpayer MLB? And I was like, I hope so, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. they've been very cheap lately with regard to, like, some of their moves on the fringes. I don't know. And I think that's going to be true for a lot of these teams. So it's we'll unpack more of this in future episodes for sure. But
get your Joel Embiid for Clint Capella trades ready.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would actually align pretty well.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
No, but like, I'm not crazy here. Like, it would be a substantially less contract they would take on. I understand that Embiid obviously is a lot better. And Atlanta would have to sweeten the deal, but that's the kind of deal that we could be looking at from the Sixers' point of view if they want to shed money.
Still not dignifying it with a response.
All right, that'll write about from Forbes. Okay. That'll be something. That'll just take your job for a day.
Deal. All right, well, that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all for listening. Hope you're staying safe as always. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Zborik, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, feel better, my friend.
Thank you, man. Don't die.